Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here another week and spend this next hour with you. Oh, I hope everybody's having a wonderful day wherever you are, whenever you're listening, and get some peace and enjoyment. And the beautiful thing about what we do is you can listen to part of us and come back and whatever. And if you want to call in today, the call-in number is 347-945-5428. For those of you who know us, you know we like to split up the show, half real estate, half self-help, motivational, people giving back in the world, not necessarily in that order. And it's just a passion, right, Randy? I'm so ready. It's just a passion we've had from day one to do it differently than everybody else. It's funny, we were doing it back then, and then now people are doing that. But back then they were telling us, you can't do that. It has to just be real estate. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
But today, and it's exciting because Daniel Ridings joins us. And he's a National Radio Network writer. So you get to peek behind the curtains. Have you ever wanted to – I'll let you take over, Randy, because you know in detail.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of people, you know, think about wanting to be a writer, a lot of things to say. If you've ever wanted to be a writer, listen up, because Daniel's going to join us in a few minutes and talk about kind of a little peek behind the curtain about what's involved in being a network radio writer. He's super, super talented. I have the privilege of working with him at the Family Radio Network. I was going to say based in Alameda, but they're going to be moving pretty soon, headquarters. But still, been in the Bay Area for, I don't know, they've been around for 60 years, and so it's pretty cool. A lot of new things going on there, and Daniel's a part of the new. The new team, the new thing God is doing, the Family Radio Network, and it's pretty fun and a privilege to be involved. He's also a pastor, and we're going to ask him about the state of the planet from his perspective, what's going on. He teaches at a Bible college, so we could go down any number of rabbit trails. We'll try not to, but because we don't want to get too deep into the theology thing here, that's not really what the show is, but we may surf the waves of some cool topics with him in that regard. As always, if you want more information on Realty Universal, of course, you can go to realtyuniversal.com. That's realtyuniversal.com, and all kinds of information there, whether you're a buyer, seller, real estate agent, or broker, and just want to kind of plug in and be a part of the Realty Universal team. There's all kinds of information there. I have a real estate question. Sometimes we do Ask Natalie, but today it's Ask Natalie, but it's kind of an impromptu Ask Natalie, because I have a personal question that I want to ask, and I think it probably, for people who have not been involved in a real estate transaction, it may be instructive. And so you ready for my question?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so and this is because my daughter Chrissy and her husband Eric, they bought a home in Chico, a very small home. A lot of work needed to be done. They opted not to do an inspection, which was a mistake. because there was tons of electrical and plumbing issues. The good news is the guy who sold them the house and was pushing them not to do the inspection basically stepped up, you know, and said, you know what, I'll go ahead and, you know, and pay for this stuff. So that was cool.
After
that
closing,
often
after they bought it? After they bought it, he was willing to do that. Wow.
Yep. So he stepped up, kind of integrity, you know, there, which is awesome. So now they've got a lot of things fixed in this little house, and they're wanting to upgrade because they just had child number three, and they see right now that what they thought was going to be enough square footage, not so much, right? And they're needing something bigger. Eric's making really good money as a computer programmer. So they actually looked at a house the other day and fell in love with the backyard. The interior needs a lot of work. Bigger house, much bigger house. All the kids can have their own bedroom. But the backyard is what they fell in love with. I mean, landscape, beautiful shady tree, pool, you know, fruit trees, just amazing. So here's the question to you. They put in an offer, and so it is in escrow. It's been accepted. The offer is accepted. And my question to you is, and this is just, again, they were asking me questions, and I was answering as best I could. But so once you accept an offer, escrow typically begins, correct?
In different states we have escrow or title, but it's similar. It does begin.
Yeah.
One of my questions that would jump out, Randy, is there a house on the market that they live in now? Did they make it contingent on the house selling or not?
No, they actually want to rent it out. So
so they want to keep it.
Yeah, they want to keep it and rent it out.
I'm assuming they qualify because they've probably already talked to a loan officer and he has made sure that they qualify with when you rent it out, they typically give you about 75% of the rental income to come off of your debt, but they do like extra reserves nowadays. So I just want to make sure, I'm sure they checked that out. I'm sure they got qualified and made sure they knew if that case or not came to it. Okay, so wrapping back around to your question, it's an excellent question. Once an offer is accepted, yes, you do open escrow or put it with the title company, depending on, you know, different states, some are escrow, some are title company. Yes, you do, but if this offer had been accepted and was contingent on them selling their home, meaning they had a kick-out clause, then there could be a scenario that escrow was not opened, okay, because it wouldn't be like they were really moving forward until their house was sold. Does that make sense? But they don't need to sell their house, so if you're saying they don't need it, they're going to rent it out, then yes, escrow would be opened. Why are they not? Has it not been opened yet?
Yeah, I just that's the question. They were surprised that their offer was accepted because in Chico, as you know, because of the fire, the campfire,
they offered a low offer.
Frankly, there are very few houses on the market, and when they're on the market, they're getting, you know, $100,000-$150,000 over asking right now. It's just crazy.
Right.
It's the quintessential seller's market in Chico, and a lot of people are selling because of that. And so they were surprised it got accepted. Is it my question to you, because they didn't know what the other offers were, is that pretty typical that they don't know what the other offers were because they can't?
Yeah, how long ago did they? Yeah, no, it's very typical. Yeah, it's very typical. How long ago did this get accepted? When did this happen?
About a week ago.
Okay.
Are they working with an agent? Yes. Yeah, they are. So I'm assuming.
And the house,
was
the house listed with an agent? I don't mean to back up here, but it ties in with my answer.
Yes.
So was it? Okay. No. Okay. Yeah, now if their agent talks to the other agent and the other agent wants to tell them, if she says, hey, by the way, my clients were wondering, their agent says, you know, providing she's got a buyer broker agreement with your people and they're her clients, she could talk to the other agent and say, you know, my clients are just curious what the other offers were. She doesn't have to tell them, but she might voluntarily tell them. There's a lot of great questions. Now, they need to check to see if escrow was opened, because when escrow gets opened, there's paperwork they need to sign, you know, giving permission for it to be opened, as well as the seller signing that. So, yeah. Well,
oh,
it's a congratulations.
Okay.
But if you have contingencies, if a seller accepts a contingency on someone else's house selling, then it's not really like a definite bona fide offer, and they will not always open escrow. Sometimes they will. One thing people want to remember with contracts is you have customary and you have, you know, when in Rome do as the Romans do, but you, that doesn't mean contracts can't be changed. You know, anybody, if two parties agree to things, things can be written many different ways. So it's a, that's why when we're talking and we're going generalization, we always have to dig it down to give a correct answer, so to speak. But yeah, well, congratulations. I think it's very wise for them to keep the other home if they can afford to do that and rent it out, because they're going to build their portfolio. Cool. Well, I just have to tell you, on a side note, and we'll loop back around, you know how we all have to be so careful with our backups on our computers and the internet, and we've been working virtually since 1999 and have backups and backups, but you never know. And nowadays people are trusting the cloud and Amazon and other companies, and what if something happens with them? And we've been using servers for since 1999. So I'm always like, we're so reliant on the internet these days, and we really have to be careful, because when things go down, we're going to be in trouble. So it's really good to have backups. And just yesterday, I don't know if you heard about it, in Baltimore City, the recordation office, which also handles water bills and tax bills, et cetera, malware got into their system, and they were unable to do anything. So the sales and purchases are on hold. Now, I have to look up the news today. Yesterday, they said that there's no telling how long it would take. They couldn't estimate or get a time. You always would hope that there's, you know, sites are mirrored and there's backups and all these contingency plans in place and redundancy plans, but that's just not what happens, right? So I'm mentioning that, though, because being in the real estate world, it's like, oh, my, can you imagine how horrible it is for people that want to buy and sell and they have to move? And they can't wait, and they're not able to do anything. They're stuck. So I wanted to throw that out there as from daily news that's happening, and a lesson for us to try to maybe, I don't know, that everybody needs to do backup somehow, and I'm not sure, even the government and local municipalities and all that. So interesting.
Wow.
So,
well, hey, I want to get to Daniel here in just a minute. Man, I have, there are so many other questions. Now that I'm kind of involved emotionally, transaction.
They're your babies.
They're my babies. But I'll save some more questions I have for next time, because I definitely want to get. Daniel just messaged me and said, "Give me 2 minutes. I'm going through the drive-thru."
Okay, got it. Awesome.
Cool. Let me ask you this question. This is because, you know, solar, everybody's getting solar, and in Northern California, because of the campfire, and PG&E is now pretty much been established, you know, that they were the cause of the campfire. And so there's this, you know, all these lawsuits, these class action suits, and PG&E is our Northern California electrical provider. It's the only one. I mean, so you can imagine people are freaking out about rates going to go up and, you know, and so solar is red hot in Northern California. I mean, my question is, they bought this house and it has solar. That's the good news, but it's on a lease plan. Whoever put it on did the lease plan for it. They didn't buy it right outright. And so that needs to be disclosed.
It must be disclosed.
Did they
know that? They knew that, right?
Yeah, they found out about it.
Okay, so what's going to happen? Their lender's going to want that lease transferred into their name before they can settle or close. So they're going to have to get that information from the company. But it's really interesting. I want to talk to you at some point. We'll do a show about Power, because Power is a really good company. We've signed up with it, and it's a really good company where you can help people get solar all around, and it's pretty cool. And it's very competitive. But that's a good question, because so many different laws have come up now, because, like, for example, in Hawaii, and different areas, but I'm using Hawaii as an example. The electric company, HECO, was not happy when all the solar started years back, and so they were putting moratoriums on them, people being able to get solar, because even when you have solar, you still need a little converter from the electric company, right? There's a little thing, you know, you don't, that has to work with it. So there were places where they couldn't get it, and a lot of the moratoriums were lifted, and you see these different issues going on all around the country. Also, there's, I saw federally, and it really trickles down. It's a really gray area, but where if you're the seller and the buyer does not want the solar, you can have to take it off. The solar companies typically might charge $500, and these are things you have to find out when you're getting the solar. There's some type of amount set up for being able to take it off because there could be issues, right, with taking it off. So, you know, you really want to check the lease, and you want to tell your family, your children, to get the contract now, like while they have their inspection period going on, and maybe their agents are possibly already doing this. I don't want to overstep anything. But while they have their home inspection period, while they're getting inspection, you said, which one did you say? Oh, the house they're in now, they bought, and the person didn't fix, there were things, issues, right? But this new one, I hope they learned their lesson before, and they're getting a home inspection, right? They're probably learned their lesson from before. Okay. During their home inspection period, very important, you might want to ask them today, is to get a copy of that solar agreement, just in case there's issues in there they don't want. Some of the solar agreements, they lease, and then you own it after so many years, you can pay a fee to buy it outright at the end of the term. They usually don't just give it to you, but usually the fee is small. Some are on there, and you never own it, Randy. If you don't want to, or if you don't want to pay the extra, they have to buy it back. We should do a solar. You can see that we have old shows on solar, but there's a lot of things that have been updated. Our shows are probably, I'd say, 3 or 4 years old on solar. We do have power on there. We do have the power on there within the last year, but that's more about the power programs and how we work with them, and you can work with them, et cetera. But the questions, it's very interesting, and that's one thing I would have them check into like immediately, so that if there's an issue and they don't want it, they can negotiate that. Yeah. So because many sellers have to buy it.
That's very good.
Okay.
Man, they're
good.
That's why we need you, Natalie. That's why we need a realtor.
No, we can do it. I like to talk more about what we're going to talk to with Daniel. That's my thing. And definitely about the state of the planet and what God, you know, how it's definitely, I love that part. Love it.
Yeah,
I guess it just gets old after you do the other part for a while.
I know. It's real estate. It's the vehicle. And thankful for it, but... the reason you're doing
it
is, of course, to give back, make a difference.
You do it so long.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's so important, though, especially. And think about, like, we should be prepared, though, because these internet deals can go down at any time, and all of a sudden we're all going, whoops, I can't get on my system.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah.
Well, you know what? Yeah, this planet, I'm serious. I mean, anyway, we'll get into it with Daniel here in a minute. But Daniel Ridings, he's joining us. He messaged me a few moments ago, said he was going through the drive-thru. Are you done eating, man?
No. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you good.
Oh, great. Yeah. It's sitting on the chair next to me, just tempting my nose.
I
thought it would be tacky. I didn't want to be talking to you guys and have you guys here in the background. Sir, do you want mild or hot sauce? You know, I thought that would be a little
right, exactly. No. I know. That's so funny. I have a friend that's really, really thin, and she yells at me every time I go through a Wendy's. So, like, if we're on the phone, she's calling me. It's like, hold on, I'll call you back.
Well, I got to say, Natalie, I could just listen to you for a while. I am super intrigued by the conversation that you guys were having. And if you don't mind me asking a quick question, I'm wondering why a new buyer wouldn't want solar.
That's a great question. I think a new buyer would absolutely want solar, right? It's just that it's important that they know what the contract is so they know what they're up against. I think usually with the payments, et cetera. So that's a great question. And I think 90% of the time they're going to want the solar, but they need to know what they're into, what it's going to cost, how much the seller's put into it, if it's going to be taken off at the end, if they don't purchase it, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Great question.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's I realize the kind of the catch-22 from my understanding, and we'll put a cap on this conversation, but is that if you pay for it outright, which is whatever it is, 15, 20 grand, now you start saving money and getting your money back right away, right? But if you lease it out, it's less money that you're saving to pay down your lease. All right, that's my understanding. But,
well, and then sometimes somebody may want to sell the house in 3 years, and the new buyers might not.
Yeah.
You know, there could be. It's just important to read the contract because it's a contract, and that it's they just don't want any surprises. And some people think they own it at the end, and they really don't unless they pay more money. But many you do. So it's just interesting in how the solar contracts are set up everywhere.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting in the future as the technology becomes cheaper and cheaper to produce quality solar. I'm sorry, I know you guys wanted to talk about something completely different.
No. You know, there's a company called Power that we belong to, and because I won't sponsor or recommend something that I don't believe in. And Power actually, it's kind of a network marketing company, but it's very interesting what they've done. And I had talked to my son about 2 years ago about us doing it, and he was like, well, I was looking at some things, and Tesla's coming up with this paint that they'll be putting on the you know, that
right.
it's going to be better than solar, and this is coming up with this, and this is coming up with that. But it didn't deter me, but it's good information, right? There's good information as to what's going to happen. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Randy mentioned rabbit trails, and I could do those all day. I love them.
So could I. I love it, too. I have no problem.
Oh,
I have to tell you, I learned that my mother has early dementia and Alzheimer's, and it's been a nightmare. It's been horrible since last July because it's early. It's the early stages. So I've been really studying brain and the issues, and I'm like, I don't believe, you know, God can heal anything. So when everyone says there's no
Amen.
Cure for this, you know, no cure. I'm like, I'm not really listening to that. And so I've been studying as much as I can here and there. But you may know this already, but I didn't know that our brains literally have over 100 billion neurons. Maybe some less than others as we get older, I don't know. But over 100 billion neurons, and each neuron can hold, it's like 60 megabytes of space. That's more than any computer on Earth can do. And I'm like, well, I say, and somebody's going to buck me if there's something that's been doing, but it's like, oh my gosh, really? Are you kidding? And then you learn how the parts of it aren't working together the right way because of the issues. But yeah, and it is incredible. So now, Randy, when I talk on 10 different subjects at the same time, you'll understand that, like, I'm just using my brain. I can't tell everybody because they get mad at me.
and to me, that's one of the clear evidences that we have a designer. And if we have a designer, that means that we're created with a purpose.
Yes.
And if we have a purpose, that's something that we need to consider. That's something that we're capable of knowing. So.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Totally. So how do we know? How do we learn to know, though, and not get off track and second guess ourselves? That's the part that, you know, kind of life hits you. You kind of have to. It's hard, but.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, if we want to go that direction, let's start with this assumption that we have a creator, we have a designer, and we're affirming that because we see how incredibly complicated our systems are. As valuable as science is to us and the remarkable discoveries that we've made through observation, what we've continually realized more and more is that we have more and more to learn all the time. The more knowledge we attain, the more we realize there will be more to attain the more we know. And so we start with this premise that we have a designer and we have a creator, and we get to the question of purpose, and the next reasonable question is, well, how do I know what my purpose is? But if we've already established that there is a designer and a creator, and he was capable of creating us, then it's a safe assumption to assume that he's capable of communicating to us as well what our purpose is.
Exactly.
So the good news is that's not necessarily our job. We don't have to work up the muscle. We don't have to work up whatever tools are required to complete that job because someone else already has that under control.
Yes.
Good stuff. Yeah.
But we find it through through listening to our heart and our spirit, I mean praying and kind of the desires and knowing that this is what we're good at or not good at, is that kind of comes through to
sure.
us, I think.
Sure, prayer, yeah.
Yeah, I've always
prayer.
Done it for years.
God is relational. I was giving, we're doing Bible study at the church last night, and I was leading a Bible study on Exodus chapter 3, and it's this famous passage where God tells Moses his name, and he says, I am who I am, right? And
mm-hmm.
we don't really get that. It seems like it's an incomplete sentence. I am what? Like, what are you trying to say here, right? Well,
right.
That's the point, is that we're finite. Moses is up against an impossible task. God gives him his purpose. He says, you're going to go and deliver my people from Egypt and from slavery. And Moses' response is, well, who am I? Clearly, I don't have the skills required for this position. In fact,
right.
The whole reason why I'm out here 300 miles away from Egypt is because I was running from Pharaoh because he was trying to kill me because I killed a slave master.
Right.
And now you want me
yeah.
to go back to him
yeah.
and say, hey, by the way, this nation that you have in slavery that is completely supporting your economy right now, you're going to have to let them go. And Moses is yeah. intimately aware of the fact that this job is way too big for him. He says, who
yeah.
am I? And God's response is, I will be with you. In other words, it doesn't matter who you are, Moses. You're simply a tool in my toolbox. And this is for your good, because trust me, you're going to appreciate the relationship that we have later. But you're who I'm using. So the ability from God's perspective is mine. God's saying, I'm going to do it. It doesn't matter who you are. It matters who I am. And so then Moses' next question is, okay, so who are you? Because Moses was raised where you have a God for this department, and you have a God for that department, and you have a God for agriculture,
right.
and you have a God for fertility,
right.
and you have a God for fill in the blank. So he's saying, okay, well, God, you know, where's your resume? Where does freeing slaves and war and whatever may be involved in that, where does that fall into your resume? And God's response is, I am. In other words, I'm
wow.
completely big enough to accomplish whatever I want to accomplish, whatever I need to accomplish, and I'm not limited by you.
Wow.
The whole point of that section is that we're just supposed to have our minds blown in terms of how vast and how capable God is to accomplish his glory. And at the same moment, realize how small we are in comparison.
Definitely.
But it doesn't end there. Because at that point, God gives him his name, but it's not a name like I'm calling you Natalie and I'm calling Randy Randy. It's not the person. It's not what he's being identified as. It's what is his story? What is his capability? What is his reputation? What has he been known to accomplish? It's everything that describes who he is. It's his being. It's a description of his being. And once you receive that, then you get to step to the next sentence where God tells him his personal name. Oh, yeah, you're going to call me Yahweh. Now that we've established that I'm able and I can do whatever I need to do, and I'm not limited by your perceptions, by your abilities, by X, Y, Z, now, based upon your understanding of my being, we can have relationship, and you get to call me Yahweh. And what is a name? A name is a relational claim. If I use Randy's name, it's because I have relationship with him and I can call upon authority that we have in our relationship. So if I'm at work and I'm writing something and maybe Randy is our head producer. And so we're working on a project and Randy asks me to work on a particular piece, and someone comes by and says, hey, what are you working on? And I say, well, Randy wanted me to do this. Well, suddenly Randy's name is on whatever I'm doing. So there's an authority, there's a substance that's attached to that. And that person's going to say, okay, that must be important because Randy asked you to work on it. He's got a plan and a purpose for that. So that's what God gives to Abraham when he gives him his personal name, Yahweh. So there's
wow.
our little mini dissertation of Exodus chapter 3.
I love it.
Boom.
I love it. Well, because you know how Moses, it took 40 years to do what he could have done in 2 years, right? Sometimes with life,
right.
I say, oh, dear God, it's taken me all these years to finally start getting it. Like, because I felt the mission from years and years ago. You know, in your heart, you're like, besides help saving people, I'm talking about, you know, our personal, like, we say real estate's the vehicle. And but I didn't get that for a while. And then I'm still learning, and I still can get swayed and still feel double-minded and not want to be double-minded,
sure.
you know, where you have your faith, but yet you're saying, why am I confused about this? Is this the right direction to go in, you know? And but at different times in life, no, I knew that path, and nothing could stop me. I mean, for anything, what I was heading on to do, nothing could, you know, because – so it's kind of interesting how this works, being a human, loving God, and as much as, you know, we trust. And I guess the more and more we know the word, the easier it is, I would say, because – but God says, without knowledge, my people perish, right? But
sure, I mean. Sure. And I think the struggle is a beautiful thing.
Really?
When I look at
really?
It's difficult.
It doesn't
absolutely.
Feel beautiful, but I get you.
it's a reminder, it's a constant reminder that I'm not the one in control. And I don't have to bear that burden. Because things are going to happen that are out of my control. And my job is to really to trust and obey. And in that place of dependency, when I let God be God, then I can have the fullest amount of joy in him. And I can endure things that I wouldn't be able to endure if it were my job to carry the load and carry the burden. It's not easy. It's not easy. Things happen. And sometimes I cause bad things to happen, you know.
Right.
Sometimes I screw stuff up.
True.
And
right.
my wife will tell you that. My wife will tell you that. My kids will tell you that. Sometimes daddy messes up. And you know what? He remains good. And I think when it comes to moving from situation to situation to situation, God allows us to encounter difficult times bit by bit in bite-sized chunks to stretch our faith. And I was telling the class last night, if he gave it to me all at once, I think I would explode.
That's true.
And I, you know what? I might be okay with that because I know where I'm going. But for his purposes and for his glory, as he stretches my faith, he gets the most out of my life. And so what better place to be?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
100%.
In his will.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, tell us,
yeah.
what do you think about the state of the planet? Randy was saying you were going to talk about the state of the planet, which we know is, and it's all written, it's there, but there's a lot of turmoil going on. There's a lot of change going on.
Sure. And that question can go in so many different directions. And so I was I mean,
the politics, everything. Yeah.
I mean,
we have 25 minutes, bro. We have 25 minutes. So.
Yeah. Well, here's I guess the place you would start is that I think when we're so focused on the now, we always think it's worse now than it ever has been. And
oh,
I think people
right.
have always thought. People have always thought that it's worse than it ever has been. You know, there are times in the medieval ages when life expectancy was like 35 years old or something.
True, right.
You know, and so we've always got opportunities coming to steal our joy and to, you know, to have these doomsday type attitudes. And the sad reality of today is that there's so much that contributes to that because of the technological revolution that never could before. You know, I was encouraging a brother in the Lord a few weeks ago to stop listening to certain conservative talk radio programs. Not because in and of themselves they were bad, but because he was just angry all the time.
Oh,
he
that's
drives,
point,
a vehicle. He drives a vehicle for a living, and it was just consuming him. And every other word out of his mouth is, you know, who knows? It could be tomorrow, and this country's going to be in a civil war, and we're going to have to go and hide out in the hills and yada, 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 yada. And it's like, oh, my goodness. Like, where
that's
is your joy?
That's a good point to stop. Exactly.
Yeah. When is the last time you went and knocked on your neighbor's door and had a conversation about the Dodgers versus the Giants? You know? When's the last time you brought a gift to somebody who wasn't expecting it and you got to see them light up? When's the last time you prayed for someone that you don't get along with or that you disagree with and you really took it upon yourself to gain a heart of compassion for someone that you know that God has a heart of compassion for?
Right.
The worldviews out there, it just seems like there's so much being thrown at us from all sorts of directions that would seek to influence us to anger in order to serve the particular cause of whatever that source is, whether it be left or right or top or bottom or middle or what have you. It's sad to me that it's much more difficult to find positive sources of media and information than it is to find negative sources. Or at least that's my perception.
Right. It's true.
I don't know if you guys would agree with that. Yeah. So the state of the world, you know, there are so many things to be excited about. We are in such a period of transformation. It's incredible. The world has never progressed technologically as fast as it is right now. You think about something simple like the record. You know, you would grab a record and you put it on the record player and you listen to the record, and that was the peak of music technology for how long? Would you say,
right.
if you had to guess, at least a couple decades, right?
Right, exactly.
And then, and I don't know if the 8-track ever got to that level, but then you had the cassette tape, and the cassette tape was probably the king of the personal music apparatus for maybe 20 or 30 years. And then after the cassette comes the CD, and I remember I bought my first CD in, I believe it was 1999, and it was probably only 10 years until we started getting MP3 technology, and then people had MP3 players, and then all of a sudden that's adapted into the phone, and that lasted, what, 5-10 years until people are now not even owning music, they're streaming it. So we see that the periods of certain technological advancements being on top of the industry are getting shorter and shorter and shorter because technology is advancing faster and faster and faster. And so does the production, the distribution of whatever it takes to play or to own that technology. So I had a pastor many years ago who coined a term, glocal, G-L-O-C-A-L. And he talked about the glocal community.
I like that.
And what that is it's our ability to be within close proximity with something that is global, with something that is actually thousands and thousands of miles away from us. But our proximity in terms of communication, in terms of idea sharing, in terms of influence, in terms of finance, in terms of fill in the blank, has gotten closer and closer and closer and closer. And so we're experiencing a time now in which exposure to information and philosophy and science and the arts and is so great. And we're trying to figure out how to manage it all because we've never had access to this much substance before.
That's true.
And that can be used to the extreme positive or to the extreme negative or to everything in the middle. So it's a really interesting time. I think if I had to talk about the state of the world, I think I would focus on that as point one. And then from more of a a religious philosophical perspective, I would say that one of the biggest struggles that I encounter in ministry, and I think is somewhat epidemic worldwide, is the focus on self. The propensity of the individual, as they are encouraged by culture and whatever their influences are, to consider themselves as primary, that the purpose of my life is to accomplish my dreams, and I am the end of, you know, the end of my being is my own glory. And it, they wouldn't say it like that, but we act like that.
Right.
And scripture tries to pull us away from that. In every single regard in which the word love is mentioned in scripture, it is precisely selfless. It's all about considering others better than yourself. It's always about each one should look not only to his own needs, but also to the needs of others. It's about giving of yourself, even out of your lack, for the sake of others. It's about sacrificing yourself. There's no greater love than this, than he who lays down his life for his friend, right? And yet we have this big movement, at least in my circles. I don't know if you guys have been exposed to this, but in my circles, I hear it all over the place. Oh, you know, you've really got to love yourself. And you've got to love yourself in order to love others. And it sounds great. You know, it sounds like, oh, yeah, you know, and that's tickling my ears, and it makes me feel good. And yet it seems to me, my pastor said this, probably a couple of years ago, he said, the only time that people ever feel the need to love themselves is when they don't feel that they are loved by others. When I am loved by others, I never come to a point where I'm like, oh, I really need to feed myself with more affection. Like, I'm full. I'm full from the love of others. Now, I understand taking care of your own needs and taking care of your body and doing what's good for yourself. Absolutely. That's called being a steward of your own body. But in terms of just putting more affections on myself, there's only a need for that when I don't feel it coming from anywhere else. And so my hope and my desire is that the church, those who are in Jesus Christ, would become so good at loving others that this idea that you need to love yourself would just organically vanish, become null and void, that people wouldn't even consider it because the need is gone.
I agree with you 100%, but I think with a lot of the social networking, you're seeing a lot of people that may be more loners, or they're used to being home more. Now, many people work from home instead of having to go to the offices. We in real estate were one of the fields where, even with offices, could start doing the homework. I mean, years before many companies, like now you're seeing where companies allow it, real estate is easy to do it. But I can see where, though, there are people that tend to be alone a lot, and then they get into the social networking, and they're not really connecting with people, and maybe not connected to a church, to where they do start to get depressed and wonder what to do. And you constantly do, you're right, you hear people say, you have to fill up your own cup. You have to fill up your own cup before you can help others. It's like what they say on the airplane, you know, if you're with a small child, make sure you put it on your mask on yourself first with the oxygen before putting it on the child.
Sure.
So I hear you, because we're constantly, I hear you totally what you're saying. I've also seen where sometimes we can become so selfless that we're doing for everyone else before taking care of ourselves first. And so that's kind of where you want to give and help, and then, or there's an emergency, or there's a problem, I can fix it, and you haven't taken care of yourself. So what would you say to somebody if they said that? Like, how do we do, and we want everybody, we want Christians, we want the church to show love. Not everybody shows love. I mean, we see a lot of situations where people call themselves Christians, but they're wolves in sheepskin clothing, and they're not. I'm not saying the majority. The majority are wonderful. But what would you say to somebody that said, hey, I'm trying to do all this, but I do need to take care of myself because I neglect myself, even in eating or even in my own work or my own thing. If there's somebody else having issues, I stop everything and run to them to help. So how does that? Does that make sense? I'm kind of going around in my question,
but I
see both sides. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of what you're talking about, too, is codependency. And
definitely,
people often find a need to be other people's rescuers even when they're not capable of doing it. And what's really going on there a lot of times is not necessarily the desire of someone to love on somebody else, but the desire to maybe earn someone's affection or to appease some guilt. Yeah, sure. Maybe they felt they've dropped the ball in the past and they're trying to make up for something. Maybe they feel that they're a disappointment, not even to the person that they're trying to help, but to somebody else, and they're trying to, in their mind, appease. Like, there's so much that can happen there. And I think what needs to happen.
That is such a perfect answer, codependency. I never thought that's such a perfect answer.
Yeah. Well, and I would never say it like this to the individual that I'm considering to be codependent, unless we had a deep established relationship. But in reality, codependency is selfishness. The reason why codependency is selfishness is because I'm doing something for me under the guise of doing something for you. I'm accomplishing something for because it serves me. Now, that's probably not conscious. That person is not thinking that way. But that's the reality of what it is. And we know that's the reality because they keep on doing it over and over and over again because it doesn't work. Right?
I see.
And really what they're doing is that's why codependency is an addiction, because they're getting their next fix. And they're wearing themselves out, and eventually they're going to break down because their body just can't take it. So what needs to happen in that type of a situation is more than words. What we tend to do, my wife and I, is we invite people into our home, and we love on them, and we demonstrate our love in such a way that they cannot help but get that the love that we give them is not earned. You are not allowed to work for the love that I give you. You're not allowed to earn the love that I give you. Because if you think that you've earned it, you don't really understand what it is. And if you think that you've earned it, and you think that you've worked for it, and you've worked for this acceptance and this love, the problem is the moment you mess up, you're going to, in your mind, shut off community because you think you don't deserve it anymore.
Got it. Wow.
And it's true. The simple fact is, if we have a fundamental understanding of the gospel, the truth is you don't deserve to be loved. Thank God that that's not the justification for us loving one another. The reason why we love others is not because they deserve it. It's because what I deserve is separation from God's goodness. What I deserve is hell. But Christ came and God demonstrated his love for me while I was yet a sinner. God demonstrated his love for me. So how can I not possibly extend that love to others?
Right.
If I can actualize myself with this reality that God's love for me is not a demonstration of my worth, but a demonstration of his worth and his glory, and my job is simply to receive it and to be grateful and then to spread it and to give it to others, oh my gosh, like what happens when a community really grabs that and is suddenly able to just love on people to the extent that it's just almost awkward and weird.
Right.
Have people coming into our church and it's like, oh my gosh, why did I stay at your church? Because you guys wouldn't stop hugging me and it was weird, but I knew it was genuine.
And
you know what I mean?
Looking for something. Exactly. Where is your church? In Nashville?
No. So I like you, I work remotely most of the time. When I'm not working remotely, I'm working in the Alameda headquarters of Family Radio. Our church has 4 campuses in the North Bay area of California. Our main campus is in Sonoma, which is about an hour northeast of San Francisco.
Yeah, I know.
With no
I'm
traffic.
Familiar.
The campus that I'm most present at is in Santa Rosa. And we have a Spanish campus in Sonoma as well. And then where I was teaching Bible study last night is actually in Guerneville. I don't know if you know where Guerneville is.
No.
Guerneville is like, oh my gosh, Guerneville is an interesting, weird, lovely city. But that's a whole other conversation. But Guerneville is like, if you mixed, you know, hippies and cowboys and rich people and homeless
artists
all into one big group.
Neat.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then you put a river right in the middle of it, and
wow,
it's a very interesting place, and it's got a unique history. But it's a powerful ministry that we've got going over there. Most of our campuses, so we're growing. We're being given more campuses. Two of our current four campuses were churches that had just come to the end of their, you know, their wit's end, so to speak, and the struggles of ministry, and they just decided, we're done, we're throwing in the towel, we're giving up. And they approached us and said, look, here, do you want this land? Do you want this ministry? Can you take this, and can you do something with it? And
wow.
In that situation, typically what we do, well, first and foremost, we pray. And we do what we can do to discern God's will, God's desire for whether or not he – I think there are a lot of churches out there that were man's ideas and not God's plan. And that's kind of a tragic
reality.
Real
baby.
So we want to make sure that we're in the will of God, because it's his program that we're, you know, we're serving, not our program that he's serving. And then what we do is we come alongside these ministries, and, you know, every situation is unique, but we want to make sure that people end well, that people finish their race well. And so we'll come by and we'll support and we'll do whatever we can do. And there have actually been churches that have come to us and said, hey, can you take this ministry? And we've come by and we've supported them up until the point in which they regain their strength and their vision and say, no, I can do this. Thank you for your help and for giving me the boost when we needed it, when they were ready to give up, and now they're restored and they're doing it again.
What's the name of your church? I'm so looking for.
Sure. The name of the church is Lighthouse, and I know there are probably 10,000 Lighthouse churches out there, but Lighthouse Sonoma campus is our main campus, Lighthouse Christian Church.
Wow. Okay. I love it.
And what's unique about our church, most churches, when they grow, there's two types of church growth. There's organic growth, there's, you know, growth through evangelism, and then there's transfer growth, which isn't really growth at all. It's just people leaving one church and becoming part of another church. I believe the numbers say that typically with church growth, it's usually 80% transfer growth and 20% what I would call kingdom growth. And with our church, that's inverted. The majority of our growth is new converts and not people coming from other churches and becoming part of our church. So I think that's probably the most interesting thing about the ministry that we've got going on. Yeah, praise God. Thank you.
Praise God. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Again, Daniel Writing with us. And we really didn't get to we've got like about 5 minutes.
Oh, we better
minutes,
do
man,
that, Randy.
To talk about
we better do that, Randy. We always get good by
behind the church.
Sorry.
I love that. You know, that Daniel could just go, man, and share what he shared.
Mm-hmm.
And so great. This is literally, and if you're just tuning in live, obviously, blogtalkradio.com/RealtyUniversal. You can listen to the archived version of this show. There's some solid stuff here as regards the state of the world, because the state of the world, I could sum up maybe what Daniel said, In this way, is that literally the state of the world depends on your viewpoint in terms of, you know, your relationship with God and how you view it biblically or not. You could be all freaked out, right, if you don't believe in
the
word of God.
The one word,
otherwise, you could be.
Right, and the one word that I heard Daniel say, and I definitely want to hear about the National Radio Network because we put it out there and we're like, it goes by so fast. What he said, that the people's joys get stolen, the joy. And when we love God and we go, we have the peace and we're walking, we are a lot more joyful, I've noticed, than when we're, stressed or anxious, because things are always hitting us in life, right? I mean, it's not always a joy ride, so to speak. But when we have our faith it does bring us joy and not put all that stuff in our mind that's not good and negative. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
In his presence is fullness of joy, you know, and to the degree
Amen.
That we can be in his presence, which means abiding in him and all of that good stuff, we can be joyful regardless of what's going on. And but, yeah, we could go down that trail again. We really – it's so good, though, because people need to hear that. We have, like, 3 minutes. So,
Amen.
Daniel, we're going to have Daniel back.
Yes, sir.
That's a good thing. Talk to us for a minute, man, about your experience at this radio network, man. You basically write commercial-free. You write promos, and you write copy for on-air promos and features. Give us kind of the three-minute overview of that job, man.
Sure. So anything basically that's written comes through me at Family Radio, and it's a really exciting time, Randy will tell you, to be a part of Family Radio because we're turning over a new leaf. If you don't know the history of Family Radio, I'll let you Google that, and that's fine. But we are 60 years old. We're 60 years old, and we're going through a major transformation while still being faithful to our community of listeners and offering them a service that is incredibly unique. That is, I don't know of another – I know there's no other stations locally, but in terms of stations as big as we are, I don't know if there's another network of stations that plays hymns like we play hymns or that does Bible readings like we do Bible readings. And so a lot of my time is you know, supporting the backbone and the structure, writing copy for announcers to reference, writing promotions. We are listener supported. That's why we don't do commercials. And so I'll write financial pieces. I'll write letters to our listeners. But a lot of what we're doing now, too, is creative work, which is funny because that's actually – my title is creative writer. So I don't – you know, I'm not a legal writer and I'm not a technical writer, so to speak, even though sometimes we get into – whenever writing needs to happen, we do what we need to do. But in terms of being creative – we are at a point in which we are being given the opportunity to be more creative than we ever have before. And because of that, I get to work very close with Randy, and it has been a blast.
I love it.
With his expertise and his professionalism and everything that he brings to the table. So on one hand, I do believe in the skills that God has given me to accomplish what's going on here. But on the other hand, I'm just trying to be a sponge and soak up from the folks around me and see what I can learn and contribute more and more. And so we're getting into an era, we're getting into a time in which we're doing a lot more creative writing, working on new features and seeing how we can transition with the world into this new technological age like we were talking about before.
Is that your leadership that's changed that's allowed that? Or is it, I mean, I know God's hand's all over it. It's obvious because I've listened to Family Radio.
Sure, yeah.
But what do you think? Do you think it's been the leadership, or I mean, what do you attribute that to through the humans? You know how God works through us. So.
Sure, absolutely. Well, there's two things. One, there has been a need to redeem our image, because they're like I said, if you want to do the research, there's some history there that we would kind of wish everyone would just forget about. And that was a while ago. But as you know, good news tends to have a lot less volume than bad news.
Sure.
And so something negative can be 20 years old, and you're still trying to let people know, hey, by the way, that's 20 years old, and we're not the same people anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And to that end, leadership has changed. We just brought on two new directors that are fantastic and – are really pushing us to do what we kind of have wanted to do for a while, but never really had the permission to move forward. Because, I've only been in the industry for a short period of time, and my background was not creative writing. My background is theology. I came to the table with three theological degrees. And so, your word tends to be valued in the area of your expertise. And so, you know, I came with all sorts of ideas that were above my pay grade. And now we have new leadership in that is really leading and guiding us. So it's such an awesome time to be a part of Flame Leader.
Fantastic. Sounds great.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, we're going to have you back, dude, because this was amazing. We are right up against the clock
by.
And a hard break. But, yeah, God bless everybody. Thanks, Daniel.
Absolutely.
Daniel,
thank you
so much. God bless you. It's all right. And,
thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.